Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey folks, welcome to the Processing Blue Podcast. I'm Panthers beat reporter Mike Kay here with Alex Zutlow, my fellow Panthers beat reporter. Alex, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. Michael E.K. has a poppin'.
I think only my grandma gets the opportunity to call me Michael, but
okay.
I also
said poppin', so I have no idea what's coming out of my mouth this morning, but let's have some fun with it.
Okay, we're off to a great start here, as you guys can tell. So we're in the midst of this head coach GM search, but we wanted to kind of put a bow on this 2023 season of terribleness. And who better to do that with me than my partner in crime, or partner in Carolina sadness, I guess, Alex Zutlow. Alex, we've seen some stuff, huh? It's been a wild first year for you on the NFL beat. Before we kind of get into our subjects, I'm just saying, I want to get to kind of, what did you learn about the NFL that maybe you didn't know coming into this beat? I know I'm kind of, shooting from the hip here and just saying, hey, rap a little bit, but what, for people that have never been in this industry, who don't understand what we do exactly, what did you take away from your first year on an NFL beat?
Well, like you said, it was my first year on this beat covering an NFL team. I didn't really know truly what to expect. One thing that I'm truly thankful for is having someone who works sincerely as hard as you do, Mike, because it kind of taught me to have a similar motor. It kind of taught me to know that anything can happen at any time. Of course, I've had other professional reporting experience where you kind of always have to be locked in on social media. You got to be locked in on Twitter. News breaks at 11:30 p.m. some nights, stuff like this. But that was an important wake-up call for me, was to know, just as you always say, that the beast of the NFL always needs to be fed. One important distinction I would say, before this, I was covering NASCAR for the Charlotte Observer. And one thing that you kind of take for granted covering other sporting enterprises like NASCAR, like a sanctioning body like that, where it's more of a league, is you cover a win every week. You cover a triumph every week. That's what we love as sports writers. And I've quickly learned as Carolina Panthers beat reporter that you got to find smaller moments of joy when triumph just isn't in a season, if you know what I'm saying. You got to find ways to be creative. You got to find ways to keep pushing the stories along. What makes a team compelling? Because they're always going to be compelling. You got to explain what has went wrong, as opposed to always focusing on this guy won or why this guy has done some tremendous things in his career. So yeah, you're letting me ramble, and I can ramble all day, but that's essentially what I learned in my first year in the NFL. And I'm very happy that me and my buddy got to do it together.
Well, you weren't the only person who had their first year in the NFL. Bryce Young, the first overall pick, took his lumps. He learned that he had to find joy or excitement in those small moments, because he didn't have a lot of big ones. I think as we move forward, obviously, and I've said this several times, the 2023 season was about Bryce Young. And I feel like, given what was around him, it's kind of an incomplete evaluation. That said, he's going into year two, as CJ Stroud has had a monumental rookie year. He's still in the playoffs after an incredible wild card win. As we look at Bryce Young, he's going to have a lot of pressure on him in year two. I think for a first overall pick who started right away, the pressure really wasn't on him from the standpoint of like the team or really locally. I think nationally, he wasn't very much in the conversation solely because the Panthers weren't really in the conversation, which allowed him to kind of avoid tons of criticism outside of social media, outside of, you know, our weekly grades column, what have you. Now everybody's going to be like, this CJ Stroud kid's amazing. What do you got, Bryce? And fair or not, that's the way it's going to go. So my question to you is what do you think his upside is, and what's the biggest thing you want to see him accomplish going from, you know, his rookie season through this summer with a new head coach to this season?
Well, just to quickly dwell on, just to quickly touch on the CJ Stroud aspect of it all, I think it's always been a difficult thing to compare the two. As we've said ad nauseum throughout the season, the two different situations, two different franchises with who are in different states of their building. I mean, the guy who brought in Bryce Young got fired by week 12 in Frank Reich. So there are a whole bunch of things that it's still difficult to parse out who is this guy. But I do understand from an outside perspective, from a fan perspective, that Bryce Young might catch some strays along this CJ Stroud run. But right after you compared me to Bryce Young in our first years in the NFL, I appreciate that, Mike, you asked me about his upside. I think the biggest upside he has is he has this clutch gene, this intangible thing. He has the sort of charisma when the game's on the line, the sort of where else would you rather be leadership that you saw a couple times this season, which is valuable. And those three times that he kind of let the Panthers fans give reason to dream, those three times are the win over Houston, where he took the team on a 15-play, 86-yard drive in just over 6 minutes of game time to win that game with a game-winning field goal. Second time was the win over the Atlanta Falcons. That was also a really long drive to punctuate the game, 17 plays. And then this didn't turn out in a win, but the loss over the Green Bay Packers late in the season, he also showed signs of having that like clutch, that clutchness in his DNA. He got the Panthers all the way to the Green Bay 31 in two plays in 19 seconds right before he failed to spike the ball in time to force overtime. And I thought this was really impressive, and I think it was certainly what the Panthers thought they were going to get when they sold so much for him this past offseason. Of course, now that's his upside, and at the same time, even in this upside, you can kind of see an area in which he can improve, which is in the big plays. When you have to orchestrate 15 play drives, when you have to orchestrate 17 play drives to score, that's unsustainable. We've asked Frank Reich about this, like when he was still here. That sort of thing, void of the big plays, is brutal. So in order to be an offense, in order to lead an offense that can make the big plays, that means being accurate on deep throws. That means being selective about when to throw the ball deep, aka not on third and one, aka not on fourth and one, when you haven't completed a deep pass like that all day. I think, and I know I'm rambling, I'll pass it back to you in a second, but I think the stat that best illustrates this idea is, and I have this in front of me, of the 17 Bryce Young-led drives that ended in the touchdown in the 2023 season, a whopping 10 of them punctuated a drive that lasted 10 plays or more, and 9 of them took up over 5 minutes of game time. So what that tells me is the Panthers offense was rarely going to score quickly, if they did score, and they were rarely going to make big plays. And for an offense and for a quarterback that's looking to make meaningful strides 2024, that all has to change.
Well, and you brought up his clutch gene, and so what I would say is that I'll start off with what I think he actually needs to improve on as opposed to what his upside is, because in order to get to that clutch moment, you have to be good enough to get to being in the clutch, right? You can't be blown out. You can't get off to a slow start. And I think this offense as a whole, but Bryce in particular, needs to start fast. You know, when you have your first two drives, typically you have your best 20 plays that you practice throughout the week. And so you need to see him start faster. And that's something the next offensive play caller really needs to supercharge here, in that he is not a guy who has started fast ever. It's just not happened. Like, that's, you know, there was the drive in Atlanta early in the game where you're like, okay, he can do this. And then since then, it's really kind of been a slog for him. Like, he wakes up in the second half and the offense wakes up in the second half. I would say the thing that I'd like to see him improve on the most is being able to start quicker, to be able to get into a rhythm quickly, not to have to, you know, climb out of a hole after halftime, right? Like, this team never led in the fourth quarter. They were always trailing. So I think that that's put the defense in a lot of bad positions. I think that's why you see the sack numbers are down. I think that's why you see the lack of interceptions, because teams aren't being forced into mistakes because they're typically in the lead and they're, you know, coasting a little bit. And then I'd say from his upside, look, CJ Stroud was who I would have taken. I just like a true pocket passer. That's well documented. I've said it, I've written it. But I think that Bryce Young was still the, for what their philosophy was and what they planned to do, I think on paper, offensively, it made sense to take Bryce Young. I think Bryce Young was leaps and bounds the more dynamic player on film. No question. So I thought either guy would have been a worthy first overall pick. I still think they're both worthy. I mean, obviously CJ Stroud immediately is propping up, but you don't bury a guy after 1 year. If you were comfortable with his size and his durability outlook, he made sense as a number one overall pick. I had some questions. Now I don't, because obviously the kid can take a hit. He took quite a bit of them, right? I think for him, though, the upside comes with his ability to improvise, and they just didn't allow him to do that during the first half of the season. I think he's proven that he can be durable. I think he's proven that he can take hits. Let the guy cook. Put him in space. Design rollouts. Use pre-snap motion. Allow him to make the best of his gifts. I mean, he is a true improviser. The problem is, and you see this with Jalen Hurts as well, is when you cut off half of the field, you limit his opportunities. So, you know, you've got to be selective with your rollouts. You've got to be selective with your play design. And I think what he needs is somebody who can give him time to throw and space to throw. And until he gets that, we will never really truly know what this guy has.
Well, so, like, sorry to cut you off. But one question that kind of spawned while you were talking at that last part was, we asked Thomas Brown what he thought, because to the outside eye, Bryce Young had been making a lot more changes and reads at the line of scrimmage and audibles and all these things. And we essentially asked him, is he doing this more for one? And for two, is that part of his game? Is his quarterbacking when outside of the huddle, when the game is in front of him, has that developed as quickly as Thomas has wanted him to? And, you know, Panthers offensive coordinator kind of shrugged and laughed and said, no, I wanted it to be there day one, but that's not how it always works. Mike, as someone who has seen the development of Jalen Hurts, as someone who has seen a lot of things in the NFL, how quickly do you think he's developed in being a quarterback before the ball is snapped, but after the team emerges from the huddle? Like, how do you think that he's done in that department?
I think there have been some lumps. I think he's gotten confused with coverage. I think that that's happened pretty regularly. I think blitzes have still been a problem, but I think he is very football smart and attuned. But you look at Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts really struggles against the blitz. I think he had the league's worst touchdown interception ratio against the blitz in the league this year. So, you know, it'll come in time. I still think his outlook is pretty positive. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to accuse me of, like, sugarcoating anything. But I do think he is a guy who still has a lot of untapped upside, and I'd like to see him in an ecosystem where he's able to succeed. I mean, we see what's happening with Baker Mayfield in Tampa Bay. He's surrounded by weapons. He's got a relatively good offensive line. They're protecting him. I don't know why anyone would think that putting, you know, a similarly sized quarterback in the ecosystem where he failed would be largely successful. And so I think that's something to take away from this Bryce Young experiment and this whole situation. But, you know, speaking of the future, you know, I think, you know, when we talk about what this team could look like in a year, Yedroeh Evero is obviously a big part of what happened this past year. He was a bright spot. The defense was relatively good. I mean, they were third against the pass and fourth overall in yardage average. Like, and they had a ton of injuries. Every single major member of the secondary was injured at some point this season and missed games. So, you know, I think the question here is, you know, as we look at this carousel, how important is it to retain him? And, you know, why is that a doable situation? And so what I would say to you, Alex, is to you, how important is it if Evero doesn't get a head coaching job, if they bring in somebody new, how important do you think that is to this situation?
Okay. Mike, I'm smiling because I do have something to say about this that it might surprise you. I might get ratioed on this online. I might even get flamed for this take by you in a few moments. But Alex Zettlow is teammate Yedroeh Evero, the Panthers' head coach this year, this offseason. He clearly is good at what he does. He's a guy everyone on this defense and largely this team seems to respect, even after coming in and instituting this new defense, this 3-4 defense, after having a pretty solid defense in the Matt Rule, Phil Snow, et cetera, eras. He got the most out of Derrick Brown this year, who got snubbed from the Pro Bowl. I think most of the NFL would agree with that. He got a lot out of the secondary, like, as you said, was in injured disrepair for most of the year. A couple of guys fell through the cracks in his system, among them Jeremy Chinn, who we've talked about. He couldn't quite find his niche this year. But all in all, Jeremy Chinn was the exception, not the rule, under Evero's unit. Evero's clearly a good figurehead for the franchise. I think whenever he's on the podium, he's always making an opening statement, a very coach-like, head coach-like opening statement, lauding the preparation of assistants, his players. He's only 43 years old. I know I'm going off a little bit, but I think he should be given due consideration for the head coaching job. I think he ultimately should be offered it based on what he's done in Carolina. And I'm not necessarily saying this to rectify what not hiring defensive coordinator Steve Wilks did a year ago. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that necessarily. But hiring Evero is the right thing to do right now. And of course, if you don't do that, like you said, if you do give a first chance to another younger hotshot NFL coaching guy, you still need to find a way to retain him. I think, and of course, I'm basing this off of 1 year of NFL experience, but I think a guy like Evero is too valuable to give up. And the way that you ensure that he doesn't leave is giving him the keys to the car.
So, look, I think it's very important. I think it's notable that he is represented by Richmond Flowers, which gives them some wiggle room. Richmond Flowers also represents Frank Smith. He represents Ben Johnson, Bobby Slowick. So there's an opportunity there for built-in relationships and whatnot. I think, you know, he's an interesting study because last year he interviewed for every head coaching job. This year, as of Wednesday, he's interviewed for the Falcons and the Panthers job. He's got a request in for Seattle. So that's three of the seven openings right now. I think he's got to choose his path wisely. He's coming off two back-to-back seasons where his head coach got fired mid-season as a first-year head coach. Like, yikes. So he's had some bad luck along with the injuries. And so I think, you know, if they hire somebody as head coach and he doesn't get a head coaching job, he really needs to feel out this process, whether his agent represents the same people, whether he has a friendship with these people. Because as we're seeing, the interview requests have dwindled a bit, right? Not through probably any fault of his own, but recency bias is recency bias, right? And so I don't know if it's paramount to retain him. I will say a mistake that the previous regime made is hiring him, switching the defensive front and system, and then trying to put square pegs into round holes. Like, if you retain him, you really need to attack this defense from a building standpoint of basing it around Evero. Like, last year, you didn't know. Everybody was like, well, he's going to be a head coach and all this stuff if they're successful. Well, I don't know. The odds are kind of against him this year. Maybe he gets the Atlanta job. Maybe he gets the Seattle job. But right now, you don't know. And so I think if he is retained, you really have to go all in on bringing personnel that fits. Like, we saw how, I don't want to say useless, but how underused Jeremy Chinn was because he wasn't a fit for the defense. They found out a way to get Eitor Grosmatos in there, and he had a career year. But that doesn't always happen. Everybody kind of gets lost in the shuffle if they're a holdover who's not naturally a fit. Eitor Grosmatos is a rare win there because Justin Houston got injured. So I think it is important. I think he's a very good coach. I think he'd make a very good head coach. I don't know if I'm there with you on the head coaching thing, but let's talk about this. So we know that you think Evero should be retained. Who is the GM on that candidate list? Obviously, that big candidate list that came out that you think that they should hire to pair with.
Well, okay. So I am not exactly sure of the pairing that will go along with Evero and the new GM. I don't exactly have the robust institutional knowledge that you do when it comes to these coaching careers and how they intersect with these guys in the front offices and stuff. But one name does kind of jump out when I look at the list of potential GM candidates who have interviewed with Carolina or have been requested to interview with Carolina. And the guy that kind of pops out to me, and I'm sure he pops out to you, is the Chiefs Vice President of Football Operations, Brant Tillis. Again, I don't know about he and Evero's professional relationship, but Tillis essentially spent his entire professional career with the Chiefs. He joined them in 2010 as a salary cap, like, contract analyst guy. He worked his way up from there.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
He became the club's lead contract negotiator with players in 2017. He's won Super Bowls. He signed Patrick Mahomes to that record-breaking contract that will likely make Mahomes a Chief for the bulk of his prime of his career, if not for the entirety of his career. So it's nice to get a winner like that in the building. And winning is all this guy has sort of known. If the Panthers can get him, and he did interview for the job earlier this week, then I think he'd be a great addition for the franchise. Of course, a question is always going to be, how does he work with ownership? How does he mesh like that? But you won't know until we get further in the interview process. And truly, you won't know until he gets hired and he gets offered the chance. But Mike, what do you think about Brant Tillis? You like him?
I mean, I think he's a really smart guy. I think clearly he's somebody who the league likes. He interviewed for the job in 2021. They passed over him for Fitterer. He's kind of unconventional in that he doesn't really have a personnel background. That said, he's been around some really smart minds. You look at what Andy Reid has done. You look at, you know, how they've kind of built this front office. I think having somebody from a winning program makes sense. For me, I agree. I think the league's moving into this Howie Roseman-like space where you don't necessarily have to be this personnel wizard to run a team. I look at Nick Mateo, who is the I just want to make sure I get his title properly, you know, because everybody has all these weird things, but the VP of football administration for the Ravens, who also reportedly interviewed Monday. To me, he is a guy that makes a lot of sense because he's been kind of dipping his toe in the personnel department. He's worked under Ozzie Newsome, Eric Costa, those two guys that are brilliant at making the Ravens a consistent winner. He's been around John Harbaugh, who is a terrific leader and head coach for several years. He's kind of grown up in the system there, similarly to how Tillis has kind of done that with the Chiefs. Mateo has some league work experience too, so he understands that. You know, he's one of those quote unquote calculator commandos. He's not a personnel guy by nature, but I think that allows you, you've been building this personnel department up, and I know a lot of this personnel department deserves a ton of criticism for their misses. But what I would say is too, I think a lot of their misses come out of circumstance and compounded mistakes by things that are not necessarily personnel driven. I would say trades and forcing trades and doing all this other stuff has really affected their return. I think, you know, it's well documented. My criticism of the DJ Johnson pick, I mean, the Matt Corral pick, like, there's a lot to pick there, but I think a lot of that goes beyond evaluation. I think there has been way too much collaboration with the coaching staff. Let the personnel people be the personnel people. And I think if you were to hire Mateo and were to keep Dan Morgan, who has built this personnel group over 3 years, that makes a lot of sense. I don't think that Ben Johnson will ultimately land in Carolina. I've said before, I don't think this is the most appealing job in the market. I don't think this is anyone's number one choice. Yes, money matters, and that could turn the tide, but we don't really know. But the guy that I really think makes a lot of sense is Todd Monken. You know, he was Georgia's offensive coordinator during their kind of run through the SEC. He knows how to talk to young players. I think he's really put Lamar Jackson in a very opportunistic, you know, setting. I think Lamar Jackson's Lamar Jackson. He's going to probably win MVP again. He's a phenomenal talent. But I think that Monken's allowed him to be a little bit more protected as a passer. I think they're making explosive plays. I think they're spraying the ball around really well. I think they're making really good decisions. And so I think Monken, if he is all in on Bryce Young, he got a close-up view in the SEC, right? That he makes a lot of sense. He's a little bit older, but that's not a bad thing when you have a first-year head coach. He also has some head coaching experience from Southern Miss a few years ago. So I think he's also been around the league quite a bit as well. So I like his experience. I think he makes a lot of sense. Obviously, coming from Baltimore, I think Mateo and Monken would have a very clear, similar mindset and working relationship. And I think that's really important. So as we get into that, though, Alex, we've talked about this being our season wrap up. To me, like, you're going into this offseason, there's going to be 21 free agents, including Frankie Louvu, Brian Burns. Yeah, I mean, Jeremy Chinn, all these guys. You want to keep this stuff together, but a new GM makes it a wild card kind of situation. I've written about the cap space situation. If there was one free agent that you had to retain based on their performance this past year, who would that be?
Based on his performance this past year, oh boy. I mean, I guess it depends on if you can get him for a similar bargain, but I think Frankie Louvu has kind of asserted himself as among the more versatile and valuable players on this defense. Shaq Thompson goes down. He inherits that leadership role. He is as prolific as he's ever been. I think he's really good. But when you talk about body of work, I think you got to try your best to retain Brian Burns as well. And I know he didn't have as great of a year as this, or as this past year as he had in previous years, but he is, I think he's too talented and too important to this defense. He's, and also, and of course, this is not in the front of mind of front offices, but he's a guy the fans really love. And he's a charismatic guy who is recognizable to people who aren't diehard Carolina Panthers fans. And I think that's really valuable. I don't know. I mean, Panthers have had that a few times in their franchise, but he is a guy who can kind of grow into that in this era of the Panthers. So when fans sit, when the casual fan asks about the Panthers, they don't only think about Bryce Young. I think they also think about Brian Burns as well. So those are my two guys. But if we're not talking to Alex's heart and we're talking to Alex's head, we're taking Frankie. What about you, Mike? What do you think?
So I think Brian Burns is in a unique situation. I think, you know, if they can't reach a deal with him by March, he's obviously the franchise tag candidate. Frankie Louvu is going to be a really interesting negotiation because he puts up like edge numbers, but he's really a linebacker and he's not really a natural pass rusher. He's more of a blitzer. And I think that kind of gets lost in this whole thing. So I don't think he's going to get Hassan Reddick money, but I do think the negotiation pool is kind of going to be similar. And I think that might be a problem. It's probably a problem we've got to discuss once we figure out if Evero's going to be here or not, because then his role changes. If they move back to a 4-3, he's probably a Sam linebacker, so he's only on the field for two downs out of the three. I think he's going to be an interesting case. That said, you could also get a compensatory pick if he goes and signs a big deal elsewhere. Obviously, they're going to have their lumps, but here's the thing. I think if they can sign Brian Burns before free agency begins, I think that that's a win-win-win-win-win for everybody. If they cannot, they do need to seriously consider taking calls on him, because this is a team that was so bad, and being this bad without a first-round pick doesn't really appeal to either a fan base or to a new GM. And the new GM's not going to have the stink of having the Matt Rhule era. He's not going to have the stink of the McCaffrey trade, the Moore trade. And I know people will take it personally or whatever. I think Brian Burns is a very polarizing situation right now. He's not a polarizing player, but he's a polarizing situation. And clearly, you know, I think he finished like in the top 45 of sacks this season. He was not the guys who led the league had 10 more sacks than he did. So it's not like he's in a place to negotiate a market-setting contract, but he knows his worth, and I respect that. But I just, maybe a new GM is going to be able to negotiate that better than Scott Fitterer was, but I guess we'll see. I would say if you can, you have to bring back one of the two of them, no matter what. And so I think from that standpoint, well, you're also negotiating a contract extension for Derrick Brown to lower his cap number and make things better. You've really got to figure out which one you want. Either way, Brian Burns should be franchise tagged if he's not signed. I mean, you don't let him walk. But I think it's imperative that at least one of the two of those guys is in this defense next year, regardless of the formation, regardless of the philosophy. They can't let both of them out the door. So, Alex, you've got the duties of the wrap up here. So tell them where they can find all of our great coverage and how they can subscribe.
Well, just like the Panthers defense can't let go of these two guys who have really embodied the identity of the Panthers. Okay, I don't know the segue for this, but I'm just going to go to the outro. Thanks so much, all of you guys, for listening. And if you haven't already, as we'll be dropping a few more episodes throughout this offseason, because both the NFL and the Mike Case of the world never sleep, please subscribe and follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts by searching Processing Blue. And if you watch us on YouTube, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and click on the bell icon to get notified whenever new episodes drop. And finally, please be sure to stick to charlotteobserver.com for all your Panthers needs. Stay humble, stay creative, and keep processing.